this Golf Show podcast with Breck and Lab. I'm in Stamford, Connecticut, co-hosting golf today with my good buddy Damon Hack. Well, Rex, you were at Colonial, the Charles Schwab Challenge, the back half of the Texas two-step. How was your week going so far at Hogan's Alley?
It's good. Yeah, I love this golf course. I love coming here. It's just a different vibe than what you get at most tour events. This, I would kind of equate this to Hilton Head, where everything just seems smaller, but it's much more intense. The crowd's more intense. The golf course is more intense. Seems like the competition is always more intense. I said something, however, on Sunday night's podcast that I feel like is going to come back and bite me, because we were talking about TPC Craig Ranch, and we know the final scores. We know that the guys absolutely tore that golf course up. And I said, well, just wait. Once we get to Colonial, things will turn around. It'll be firm. It'll be fast. The wind will be blowing. One of those things is going to happen, because it's been pouring rain for the last...
Not fast.
Not firm or fast. As a matter of fact, it's going to be soggy and wet. So I do want to go on record right now that in a perfect world, if it was firm and fast, this would be a completely different test, but it is not a completely different test. And before I came here, and I know you want to ask me about this because you were very curious, I stopped by PGA Frisco, where the PGA Championship is going to be held next year. Yes. And you asked me a very awkward question on air about the PGA of America president, who was essentially put to pasture. And I was sitting in the headquarters building. Most awkward question I've ever had to answer, with Julius Mason staring at me.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack there. Let's first start. What were you doing there? Were you touring the facilities? Were you playing the golf course? Were you getting just a spin around the golf course, which will obviously host the PGA Championship next year, next May?
Just getting a spin. Did not play golf. Had a wonderful dinner. Julius Mason, of course, is director of communications for the PGA of America, one of the best in the absolute business. And he and his team took me around, just not the golf course, but the entire facility. And so there's a twofold answer here. And I'll make this as quick as possible, because, again, I'm still spiraling from my comments about Newtown Square. So I'm trying to put some distance between myself and what I've said about Aronimink. But this is going to conflict with those ideas, because what I said there was, from an infrastructure point of view, you would not play the Super Bowl in a little tiny neighborhood like that, simply because you're not going to maximize the business model. You're not. They sold 10,000 fewer tickets per day at Aronimink for the PGA of America. That's tangible. That's real money that they lost because they wanted to hold it at this particular golf course. Now, fast forward to Monday. And PGA Frisco is a purpose-built community. There's a huge Omni Hotel with 500 beds in there. There's a lot of land there. There's plenty of room to grow. There's two golf courses. There's the largest public putting green in the world. I mean, just this massive putting green. It's a cool scene. Yep. Yes, they have all the infrastructure. It's going to be an amazing place to go cover a major championship, because everything's going to be easy. You're 30 minutes from DFW, the airport. It's going to be easy, and exactly what I was going for. However, I don't know that the golf course is going to be beloved by all. And maybe that changes. It's really wet, and it was soggy, and there was a little bit of wind. And I think if it plays into the predominant wind, it could be interesting. But that's where I think these two worlds collide. And that's why I wanted to bring this up, because I understand the argument that, okay, if we go somewhere that does have the infrastructure but doesn't particularly might not have the golf course that we want, and we don't know if the players are going to like what they see when that golf course. We don't know if it's going to be a championship test, because it's never
very
hosted.
Unlikely based on what the seniors said and what on the players on the LPGA said, who have previously had major championships there.
Fair. And I think Gil Hance, who is the designer and the PGA of America, they've done a lot of tinkering. Kerry Haig is the chief championships officer. He's done a lot of tinkering there. I will say, I did a very quick tour around the golf course. There's probably two or three holes that are very memorable. But the one, and this is going to come back, so I want to revisit this next year going into the PGA Championship. I was being shown around by the director of golf, and we get to the 16th hole, and he goes, Gil believes this is going to be the most consequential hole to the championship. Great. 520-yard par four. We drive it. We get to the green, and I'm looking around, and my reaction was a straightaway par four, 520 yards, no dog legs, no bunkers, and a square green. That's going to be the most consequential hole on this golf course. I stumbled a little bit on that concept. I want to give it the benefit of the doubt, but I'm not quite sure the golf course is going to be the championship quality that you want. So this is where the conversation kind of comes crossed, where either you go to these iconic golf courses, these historic golf courses like Aronimink, and you play what I thought was a really cool test, or you sort of take the financial hit because you're not going to have the logistics to be able to pack the people and the merchandising and everything else in you want on that little tiny site, or you do this. I'm not quite sure there's a perfect answer.
You said it might be a great place to cover a major championship, and it probably will be with some of the accommodations that we're going to have nearby. I think from a fan experience, you could stuff 50,000 fans out there. And just from what I remember watching on television, the Senior PGA Championship or the KPMG Championship, there is virtually no trees whatsoever. And so when you have
some, not a lot, but
in
some.
Late May, and it's going to be in the, I don't know, low 90s, most likely, those fans are going to be seeking shelter, and there's no shelter available. So it might be a great opportunity for them to go out and see the very best players on the PGA Tour, Live Golf, and past champs, and it's great. It's the strongest and deepest field in golf. As we've talked about, the actual golf course, however, leaves much to be desired, which, again, was the crux of my argument. You talked about the infrastructure and the location. I always think the guiding light and the North Star in these conversations for these organizing bodies should be the golf course, and you just sort of make it work. Now, one example that has not happened over the past, now at this point, nearly two decades, is Turnberry. And there's certainly some infrastructure challenges there, the railway system there. There's also some other factors at play with President Donald Trump, who owns Trump Turnberry as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see. That's really, I think, like the one example that I can think of recently. Maybe Marion as well. I know they're going back there for the U.S. Amateur this year at least. So there's at least some USGA championships going back there. But that's a very, very small footprint, really hard to get around, logistically very challenging. But the USGA has made it imperative to them that the major championships need to go on these historic venues, top 10 venues, top 25 venues, recognizable golf courses with history and legacy and tradition. I think that should always be the starting point, and you figure out all the logistical challenges, even if they are going to take a financial hit down the road.
And I don't want this to be an all or nothing conversation, because I think that's the corner I got backed into when it came to Newtown Square, because I think you can have a bit of both. I go back to the USGA's decision to create anchor sites, and that's Oakmont, that's Pebble Beach, that's Pinehurst. And so those are going to be in the rotation into the long future for the U.S. Open. The idea being every year, every 5, 6, 7 years, they go back to Pinehurst. It's a little bit better. They have built out something. There's new infrastructure. There's new parking. There's new places where the media center goes, whatever the case may be. That, I think, is the perfect medium, because I don't think this is a perfect conversation. In the case, and again, I hate going back to Hironomic because I've really gotten beat up on this one, but if you're selling 10,000 fewer tickets per day during championship rounds at Hironomic, which you do as compared to what they're going to have next year at Frisco, talking me through the logistics, that's what it's going to be. That is an enormous amount of money for the PGA of America. And as the conversation turned, they had to raise their purse to $20.5 million this year. It is an arms race across professional golf, because as the PGA Tour continues to grow, as the PGA Tour continues to incentivize players to play in specific places, the major championships are going to have to keep pace, because you can't have a signature event outpace a major championship when it comes to purse. That's just a bad look. So that means the money's got to come from somewhere, because you're losing that money. That's real money that the PGA of America doesn't have to put towards their PGA Reach programs, to put towards their PGA Help programs. This is a member organization that needs these funds to do all kinds of really good things in golf. So this is a business conversation in my mind. You're absolutely right. These major championships should be played at the best possible golf courses, but I don't, that it's absolutely not realistic, because if it was, we would find a way to play a major championship at Pine Valley or Seminole or one of these other iconic courses that we know they can't hold the infrastructure. They don't have the footprint for this. So it's not this isn't a black or white conversation. I understand there needs to be some give and take. I think next year it's probably going to break a little bit, because you're right. I don't know that the players, I don't know that the fans are going to be a fan of walking around that golf course.
10,000 fewer fans this year at Hironomic per day. I don't know. Give 10,000 more fans per day next year at Frisco, put in the 90 degree heat with no shade.
It was lovely when I was there on Monday. It was not 90. It was lovely. A storm had just came through.
Of course it is. Because it is Texas in late spring after all. Before we get to what's happening this week at Colonial, I did want to talk, Rex, about the Florida swing that has been revamped for the PGA Tour in 2027. Again, this is just a 2027 conversation, but you do have a little bit of shuffling as it relates to the Florida swing. New next year is going to be, it's going to go from Pebble Beach, Phoenix, Riviera, then the Cognizant Classic, PGA National, is going to kick off the Florida Swing. Here's where the changes start happening, though, Rex. You're going to have the Cadillac Championship at Doral leading into the Players' Championship, followed then by the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the Valspar Championship, which is typically followed the PGA Tour's flagship event, will now be kicked down the road into mid-May. Who are the winners? Who are the losers in this new-look Florida Swing for 2027?
I don't know that the Valspar Championship is a loser because in this particular scenario, you probably wouldn't want to be in that Florida Swing. You probably wouldn't want to be 5 weeks in a row with essentially two signature events. That's Bay Hill, that's the Cadillac Championship, and the Players Championship, the fifth major. So I actually think it's probably best for the folks in Tampa that they got moved down the road. I will also say it's going to work out probably much better for the folks at the CJ Cup Nelson. They're going to be moved to essentially the end of April, April 29th through May 2. And that gets them out of sort of the footprint that they're in right now. Again, we just had a long conversation. What you didn't want is some version of the PGA Championship played in Frisco, which is a suburb of Dallas. The CJ Cup played in Dallas. And then this event played in Fort Worth. That's all major. That's all one market. So you probably didn't want to see that. I think it's best for both of those events. I still don't know. It's not as though the Valspar is going to end up with a better field because you still have a signature event right after it, Truist Championship, followed by the PGA Championship. So it's still tough scheduling.
A couple of thoughts here. We talked a lot about this year's schedule crunch as the West Coast Swing shifts to the Florida Swing and players trying to get their games ready. It was five big events in a six-week span. Next year, 2027, is actually going to be worse. You're going to have six tournaments in a seven-week span that the top players are really going to want to play. Whether it's Pebble Beach, Phoenix always gets a crowd, always gets a top field, even though it's not necessarily designated as a signature event. Riviera is one of the players' favorite golf courses. I think Doral, to answer my own question, is going to be one of the biggest winners here. We just had it a couple weeks ago.
Winners.
It was hot. It was sparsely attended. You had Roy McIlroy among the players who was skipping that golf tournament. I don't think that's going to be the case. There's less going on in Miami at that time. It serves as a sort of a proper lead-in to the Players' Championship as well. It should play tougher that time of year as well. So then you obviously have the Players' Championship and Bay Hill. Again, those are six huge tournaments in a seven-week span. I do think if you were going to jam the schedule together with all of these marquee events, it is better to do so prior to the Masters. Guys want to play their way into major championship form, especially if the PGA Tour season is going to be starting 2 weeks later, as it is expected to do so with the American Express, roughly the third week of January. So I like that aspect. I think, as you touched on with the Valspar Championship and the Byron Nelson as well, there's going to be better spacing between the Masters and the PGA Championship as well. You're not going to have a situation where you had 2026, where you have the Masters, signature event, team event, Siggy, major. There's Siggy. Going to be a better cadence and a better flow to this one with the Masters, signature event, the team event, the Nelson, the Valspar, a signature event in the Truist, and then the PGA Championship. So the spacing is a little bit better there. I'm still viewing this overall, Rex, as sort of a transition year. I'm not putting too much stock into, this is going to be what the future of the PGA Tour is going to look like. I do think there's going to be a different cadence for the Tier 1 events. I do think you could potentially be building in some off weeks as well, especially after the Players' Championship, if they want to do that for the major championships as well. So this is just sort of a one-off, but it's certainly going to have a different feel and vibe to it than we had, at least in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's absolutely a bridge year. This is just Brian Rolapp and his team trying to figure out, piece things together until they can get to 2028 with this new product, try to get it to market for the new TV deal. So that's a bit of a different conversation. I don't know if I particularly agree with you when it comes to the Cadillac Championship, and it has nothing to do with really the timing of it, because you're right, it's still pretty packed. I think the top players, those Tier 1 players that I referenced yesterday on Golf Today, they're still going to be looking for an out, because they're not going to play 6 out of 7 weeks. We've seen it now time and time again, and that seems like the easy one. Maybe it's because of the golf course. Maybe it's because the community didn't really seem to be behind it this year. It was a flat event. Now, you're right. It was in a terrible date. Maybe this helps out on that front. But you have established events around it. You're right. Guys aren't missing LA. Guys aren't going to miss Pebble. Guys aren't going to miss the Players' Championship. And Bay Hill is a signature Siggy, to use your phrase.
But so is the Cadillac Championship. I really wonder how many players are going to sign up for Bay Hill. again, let's say you do play Doral, which is a tougher golf course than Cameron Young made it look. I think the weather conditions could be different in early March as opposed to late April when you had it this past year. Then you have the Players Championship, which depending on the weather could be very difficult. Arnold, the Bay Hill is one of the toughest golf courses these guys play all year long. Are they really going to sign up to get punched in the teeth over and over again after playing what is essentially a major championship for the PGA Tour? I'll be very curious to see who signs up for that tournament on the back end of what is a really busy stretch.
No, you're right. Bay Hill could end up being the big loser in this one-off of a schedule, as you pointed out. It was interesting and kind of to fast forward to the second half of this conversation. When you talk to players who are in on these meetings, the competition committee meetings, and trying to figure out what the new product is going to look like, there is a general theme that's emerging. They don't particularly want to play more than 3 weeks in a row. They want to be able to take the week after a major championship off. And look, this changes from player to player, but I think most of the consensus has landed on the week after a major championship. And they want to try to find somewhere in the middle of the season. And the way it was told to me yesterday by one player, maybe an all-star break kind of concept where you have actually a three-week break. And I go, that all sounds fantastic. You have too many round pegs to fit into the puzzle. You don't have enough weeks in this window that it seems as if Brian Rolapp wants to create to do all of that. And I think that's going to be where the negotiations are back and forth. I think ever since the Players' Championship, and Brian Rolapp referenced that by the Travelers' Championship, he wants to see some sort of progress. At least in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, what is the hangup? Like, where are we stumbling here? It seems to me getting from point A to point B should be a little bit easier than this. But now you start getting into the details, and we're going to talk about this week's field and the Tier 2 issue that the tour is going to have going forward. But this is a big one as well. Because I asked one player, do you want the week before a major or the week after a major off? And he kind of shrugged. He goes, sometimes I want it before, sometimes I want it after. There is no perfect formula on it. And this was one player that couldn't even figure it out in his own mind. So you start seeing how complicated this is going to be for Rolapp and his team to get this done. I don't know, I'm not a gambling person, but you start looking ahead to the Travelers Championship, which isn't that far away. And you start to wonder, is there really going to be something significant that comes out of that board meeting?
Well, you sure hope so. We've been selling this ever since Brian Rolapp announced at the Players Championship in March that we're going to have significant progress made by the Travelers Championship, the board meeting on Monday. I believe you and I will both be in Cromwell, Connecticut to cover that story. It is an interesting conversation. Where do you want that off week? I think as a golf fan, you would prefer it to be after a major championship. And I think if you're a PGA Tour executive, you'd prefer it to be after a major championship as well. So you don't have the hangover. You don't have the letdown. You don't have that PGA Tour competition overshadowed. Yeah, everyone's going to be talking about the upcoming major at the week prior, but you can at least build momentum. You can create storylines. You can launch stars the week heading into a major championship as well, which I think is important for the overall PGA Tour product.
Well, that's a good point, and I think you're absolutely right. The week after probably makes the most sense for me, just from a business model point of view. And you're probably right. The PGA Tour executives, that's the way they're going to look at it. But we have real life data that shows Hilton Head after the Masters is a good fit. It just is, and I think most players would rather go Hilton Head than rather go the Masters Hilton Head than go. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there because that's what it is right now. San Antonio Masters week off. You know what I mean? So I get that scenario as well. However, you can make the opposite argument for the Scottish Open going into the Open Championship. I think that's the perfect formula. So again, I go back to the idea. I think the Travelers after the U.S. Open is absolutely perfect. Like, it just seems that scenario just fits. So there's no right answer on this.
Yeah, I guess in theory you could see a hodgepodge, a mixture of how you do those sort of off weeks, especially if you build them in, as you mentioned, an all-star break. I think that's an interesting idea as well. Just allow guys to reset, bet in some new equipment if you want to, just rest and recover after what's going to be a very difficult, very treacherous spring schedule, it looks like, with the condensed nature of the PGA Tour schedule. One thing you mentioned on Tuesday's Golf Today, Rex, when you were reporting from Colonial, was sort of the ongoing discussion between what the PGA Tour is going to look like in 2028 with this Track 1, Tier 1 system and the Track 2 tournaments. And again, Tier 1 or Track 1, if you're unfamiliar with that verbiage, that's what's going to be essentially all of the signature events. You're looking somewhere, I don't know, 15 to 18 Tier 1 events, as reported by our buddy Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. Tier 2, Track 2 is going to be essentially everything else. And so you're going to have these potentially $30 million events and probably something closer to what we're used to with a $7.5 million purse that you see in a full field event on the PGA Tour. What are players this week telling you, Rex, at Colonial about the nature of those, whether they should be able to jump back and forth between the tournaments, or are you siloed off, you and 120 others who are going to be in these fields in track one, and everyone else is left for the scraps?
You want to talk about unintentional consequences. There is no way Brian Rolapp and his team saw this coming as a problem. Like the list of things they whiteboarded out going into this, being like, okay, this will be a hurdle we'll have to figure out. All of the things that we've just sort of addressed about scheduling and how you essentially create the priority list, like who are going to be those 120 players. All of those things are complicated. And I'm sure there was minefields and they knew they had to tiptoe through them. This one, there was no way it was on their radar, because I actually spoke with a player who had this conversation with an executive, one of the new executives that came over with Brian Rolapp. And he sort of laid out that this executive was just flummoxed. Like, explain to me again why you would rather go play an event with an $8 million purse as opposed to an event with a $20 million purse. And there's also more points and everything
else. Or 30.
Or $30 million purse. And I think this week is a really good example. We don't know, I can't lean into this enough, if Colonial is going to be a tier one or a tier two event. We don't know if last week at the CJ Cup Nelson is going to be tier one or tier two. I think it's a safe assumption to assume that one of those will not be tier one, at the very least. I'm sure there will be a tier one event in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I doubt if there would be two. That doesn't seem the way this schedule is shaping up. And so in theory, if you look at this week's field, 21 out of the top 50 players from last year's points list, which means those are fully exempt players into the signature events, essentially tier one players, are in the field this week at Colonial. And that's a bit of a statement when you think about it, where players, we've talked about how congested and difficult the schedule is. Well, these players have made the decision. And essentially what I wanted to ask was, if this is a tier two event and you are a tier one player, is this one of those events that you'll want to play? And by and large, everyone I talked to was like, yeah, I want to be able to play that. And according to our buddy Eamon Lynch, they're going to be, quote unquote, strongly encouraged not to drop down and play tier two events. And there's a couple of reasons why. One, Brian Rolapp and his team need to be able to guarantee fields at these tier one events. If you're going to have a sponsor putting up that much money, you want something as close to full participation as possible. And two, it gets a little confusing when you have guys in tier two events trying to scramble and play their way up into the promised land. If those players are dropping down and taking points and competing, I don't particularly agree with that concept, because I'm, in my mind, if I'm a tier two player, I want to go against the best. I'd love it if a tier one guy dropped down and I got to compete against him here at Colonial or wherever the case may be. But this is one of those sticking points, and probably the one that hammered it home. The Canadian players on the PGA Tour, they're going to want to play the Canadian Open in a few weeks. That's their national open. They're going to want to go home and do that. In a world where the Canadian Open is not a tier one event, and we don't know what all the tier one events are going to be, it's not a signature event right now, so it's not guaranteed it would be. You will not be able to tell the Canadian players they can't drop down and play that event. This shows how complicated it is.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot to unpack there. I'm certainly operating under the assumption, perhaps wrongly, that Colonial will and should be a tier one event. Because as we've talked about, the PGA Tour is leaning into many factors for its future competition model. But fundamental to that competition model should be the golf course. And Colonial, even if it's going to be wet, even if it's going to be soggy, even if it's going to be a little bit slow, is still a proper test. It's still one of the 15 best courses on the PGA Tour. I would think that that should mean something, and that should elevate it to tier one status. As it relates to players wanting to play this week, would you say 21 of the top 50? Who are going to be here? Now, that's also in 2026, and you have, what, 8 signature events on the PGA Tour? So you just can't play only the signature events and the majors.
Well, wait a minute. Eight signature events, the majors, the Players' Championship, and 4 majors. That's a full schedule.
The playoffs as well. Yes, yeah, so you're probably looking at 17 schedule. Or 18 starts. Most top players, you know, barring or sans Rory McIlroy, are somewhere in that 20 to 22 range. So they do sort of pick their spots. Some are on the West Coast. Some take it easy in the summertime. A lot of players aren't playing any of the 3 tournaments following the Open Championship as well. So yeah, you can pick and choose. A lot of players do like this golf course. As it relates to the bigger question about whether players will be able to drop down and play, if these tier one tournaments are supposed to be for the best of the best, and keep in mind, they're supposed to be shifting to this 120-man field model. That is a lot of players, Rex. It's not like now where you have 72 players in the signature events and there's, you know, everyone, there's some pretty high profile players who are cut on the left on the cutting room floor. Like, we're talking about 120 man fields. Those tier two tournaments are essentially Korn Ferry Tour plus events. And those fields in tier two are going to be guys who are fundamentally trying to alter the trajectory of their careers. And you're only getting 15 to 20 cracks at doing so by playing an exclusive tier two schedule. And I think about the outrageousness of the idea of a Scotty dropping down to playing what is essentially a Korn Ferry Tour plus schedule. Like, Aaron Judge doesn't go get more reps in Scranton. And Carlos Alcaraz does not drop down and play like ITF level tennis tournaments to get extra reps. There's a separation for a reason. These are for the top players, and these are for everybody else who's trying to get there. That line should be protected. And I really don't think that Brian Rolapp and company should be catering to sort of the tour's middle class once again, who wants to pick and choose their spots to get points and earn them that way. You earn this status by your FedEx Cup ranking, your world ranking, however they're going to be doing it. You can't also cherry pick among the bottom feeders as well.
Can you do the Scranton line in Joe Biden's voice? Because when you said it, that's what I heard. Can you do the Scranton? Can you do the? Come on, you can do it. You got that in your wheelhouse. Give it a shot, please. You're digging in on this one, and it seems to me that this is a hill that you're determined to die on. Again, I'll circle back around to my Canadians, and because I think that is a perfect example. You're right. I would think that Colonial is going to be one of those tier one events. Again, I don't think it's going to be both the Nelson and Colonial, so that creates a whole nother conversation, because Scottie Scheffler and Jordan Spieth played last week at the Nelson. They're not this week at Colonial. That's their hometown event, the Nelson. This is a much more complicated subject than I think you're making it out to be. And I don't think the distinction between AAA and Major League Baseball is particularly fair, because the line between those two leagues is going to be much more thin than what you see between AAA and Major League Baseball, because the idea will be there will be some sort of elevators from tier two to tier one, whether that's Aon 10, Aon 5, whatever system they come up with. So there will be these built-in elevators that players will want to take advantage of. It is not as simple as saying that, no, you can't play. I think that's what Brian Rolapp and his team are learning right now. The one thing PGA Tour players hate the most, more than three putts, more than courtesy cars that don't have a full gas tank, more than hotel beds that aren't comfortable, is being told where and when they can play. That is the one thing that they're going to get hung up on. I don't care who you are. If you're a star player or you've just gotten onto the PGA Tour, the idea that you have the freedom, independent contractor, to go and play where you want is sort of fundamental to a professional golfer's DNA, and that's going to be tough to overcome.
That's why you need, if you're the PGA Tour, you need to make it so prohibitive for these players to skip, either because so much money is on offer, so many FedEx Cup points are on offer. You have to make it so that it's a virtual impossibility that you would want to go play tier two events. Or unless you're a Scotty and a Rory, who you know you're going to be finishing among the top five in FedEx Cup points anyway, like, you really can't afford to take one of these tournaments off. And again, we're not talking about a 25 event schedule of signature events. We're talking about 12 to 15 bona fide PGA Tour events. I don't think it's unrealistic to ask these guys, even mandate these guys, even if it's not contractual, you have to play all of these. And if you don't, there's going to be a penalty.
I can see, well, you're not going to mandate them. We've seen that in the past. We've seen how that fails. You can incentivize them with money. You can incentivize them with points. You can incentivize them with the idea that you're falling behind. Yeah, I can see how you're doing that. And I think my mind is less about them skipping it, because that's a different conversation to me. I think if Rory McIlroy, Hilton Head is going to be a tier one event going forward, whatever the schedule looks like. Rory has made it clear he does not like Hilton Head. I think Scottie Scheffler pretty much spoke this year when it comes to Doral. Maybe it was just the timing of it. Maybe he changes his mind with the move of Doral. But there's going to be players, top players, that choose, nope, I'm not doing that. I don't want to. You can find me. Rory McIlroy gave up $1 million, I think, in PIP money a few years ago not to go play.
Three
Hilton Head.
That $3 million.
Yeah, $3 million. Thank you. I think the bigger question, in my mind, the bigger question is less about skipping events than it is about going down and putting your toe in that pool, I guess, is the bigger thing. Because let's say that these top players aren't. Let's say it's not running up against a tier one event. This should be an off week for them. I don't know how the PGA Tour can tell them that. Nope, you got to go home and rest.
I mean, it's just crazy to me when you step back and think that, no, I'm not going to play a $30 million signature event. I'm going to drop down and play, let's call it a $7.5 million event against guys who are essentially Korn Ferry Tour players and guys who are scrapping and clawing to get back to the top levels. Like, that's not the best competition. It's most likely not going to be the best golf course. It's certainly not going to be enough FedEx Cup points on offer that's going to make it appealing as well. I understand that these guys feel beholden to some tournaments, whether because it's their hometown, whether it gave them a sponsor exemption when they were young, whether they're former winners of the tournament, whether they just like the golf course. Totally get all of those respects. And maybe if you're the PGA Tour, you build in, you know, I don't know, one exemption per year that you can use. If you're the Canadians and the Canadian Open is not a tier one event, maybe you can go play that one. Again, I don't really like the optics of that. I actually would put the Canadian Open as a tier one event, but that's a different conversation because it's a national open. But I do think that there could potentially be an out that way. But look, if you're a Maverick McNealy and you live in Vegas, but you went to Stanford and you grew up in the Palo Alto area, you don't have a hometown event. So how do you pull the ripcord on one of your special exemptions as well to drop down to a tier two event?
You don't have to use it. Just don't use it.
Very too messy. That's why I just say you don't give him at all. You say, I'm sorry, that was a part of your career. You've earned this separation. You've earned this distinct status. You've earned this protected status on the PGA Tour. We need you to honor it. And I think it's up to Brian Rollup to make it abundantly clear that this is the way forward for the PGA Tour. Any other storylines you're looking for, Rex, inside the ropes at the tournament you're covering this week at the Charles Schwab Challenge?
Again, I love coming to this golf course because it always kind of identifies a unique champion. I'll go back to Ben Griffin last year. This wasn't his first PGA Tour win, but it was his first individual win. And you saw how he used that as sort of a springboard to go on and play out the Ryder Cup that year. We always seem to get this at this particular event. And you're absolutely right. This should be a tier one event. Everything about it. It's a scene. The community loves it. It's turned into a big party. The golf course is perfect. The players want to come here and play. I had one player tell me yesterday that the goal of all of this is to take, and you and I can sit here and come up with probably five or six great examples of tournaments. Your hometown event, the Players' Championship, what they do in Scottsdale, what they do here. You can keep going down the list. What they do at Travelers and Hartford, which is shouldn't be a big market by any stretch of the imagination. How does the tour take that and replicate it? Because certainly what they're doing here with the golf course, with the fans, with the infrastructure, everything, this is by definition tier one. You're absolutely right. If a tournament wants to know what do we need to do to get to that next level, I would point to what they're doing here as an example.
Player-wise, most interested in watching Justin Thomas, who is coming off a tie for fourth at the PGA Championship, his best finish in a major since he won back at Southern Hills in 2022, has looked good at times, again, in his first year since recovering from the back issue. Also, Ludvig Åberg. We almost saw it last week with Siwoo Kim at the Nelson, a player who has consistently been atop the leaderboards, been in the top 10. Siwoo Kim now tied with Scottie Scheffler for the most top 10s on the PGA Tour this season. Just one off that mark is Ludvig Åberg, has consistently put himself in the mix. This golf course, particularly when soft, even if he does have a little bit of inexperience at this track, that seems to be a good fit for his skill set. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Joe Podcast with Rex and Lab. We'll be back on Sunday night for a full recap of everything that happened at Colonial, as well as the live event they're playing in Korea. John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, and the like are all teeing it up this week. We'll have a recap of that and any other news and notes that comes up in the world of golf. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Talk to you guys on Sunday night.
Let's talk about Scranton.